You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
We must obey God rather than men. Does this mean we have no responsibility to our leaders? Not at all. God has ordained human government for the peace and well-being of temporal society. Romans 13, we are to recognize the authorities are designed by God. We are to submit to them in the sphere in which God has designed them to operate. We're to do more than that. We're to honor them, show them respect. Through the years we've done that here, we continue to do that with the authorities in our city, every opportunity we have. We render to Caesar what is Caesar's. We even have been called, 1 Timothy 2, to pray for their salvation, as I did this morning. When orders come, however, to us that contradict the orders of our King, we have to obey God rather than men.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal and I'm an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. Joining me today is Josh Herring, Dean of Students at Thales Academy in North Carolina. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Coyle. How are you?
Good. I almost called it Thales Academy just to mess with you a little bit after our last episode, but decided not to.
Good job. We got some press in our local news station, and they managed to pronounce us as Thales. And I was like, oh my goodness, just to stop. So I'm glad you got our name solidly. That was well done.
I mean, I don't know that there is a pre-Socratic philosopher you guys could have named yourselves after that people would get.
Probably not. I mean, at least we're not a specifically math academy. Otherwise, we could have gone with the Pythagorean Academy, I suppose. But that's the only one that I can think of who really gets like a lot of name recognition.
Right. Yeah, Democritus, Heraclitus, and none of them are gonna do it. Someone who does have a lot of name recognition, though, is John MacArthur. So has that for a
that
pivot into the top episode. We're talking today about the blog post recently put out on MacArthur's platform, Grace to You, titled "Christ, Not Caesar, Is Head of the Church." We will put a link to this in the show notes and up on the Facebook page. We won't be reading the whole thing, but basically, this is MacArthur's. I mean, it's a blog post, but I don't know what else you... What would you call this? A screed?
He calls it a statement, but it's posted as a blog post, and it's attributed... It's from him and the elders of Grace Community Church, but it sort of has the... I'm reading this as being a bit argumentative. It's a bit rhetorical. I think he sort of ends with a call to action and asking other churches to join him. So I don't really know where to categorize it.
Yeah, it's something by John MacArthur. Maybe it needs no further category.
Maybe so.
I'm assuming all of our listeners know who John MacArthur is. He is a staple in the evangelical world and has been for more than 50 years at this point. I'm sure I've told this story on the show before. I was at a conference in 2016 or 2018. I think 2018. All these pastors, there's like 10,000 pastors there and me. They at the beginning of the conference, they gave away a prize for the person who'd been pastor of the same church longest. And MacArthur won this prize. At that point, he'd been at his church in California for 49 years. And the grand prize for the pastor who'd been there longest was a complete set of the MacArthur commentary. So... The guy's just been around forever. He's written on everything. He's done everything, and in some ways he is a real kind of evangelical champion. He was standing on the line of conservative theological orthodoxy in the late 1970s in a time when it was not popular or common to be doing that. So he gets the props as one of the grand old men of the evangelical world, even if I think he occasionally goes off the rails, especially in recent years. And it's especially interesting. I could just see the whole thing on the background of John MacArthur, but there is some background that's relevant here, specifically in the last 4 months. And yes, we all know it's been an insane 4 months, but maybe more so in California than other places, as usual. Like every other state, California shut down in March 2020 with a stay-at-home order. Like every other state, stay-at-home was fairly loose. You know, people could do things like shop for groceries and buy lumber and go to work if they were essential workers, with a somewhat broad definition of essential workers. And like everywhere else, a few weeks after shutting down, things started to reopen. And yet again, like everywhere else, cases in California started to surge once the reopening began. What the cause of that surge is debated, and I don't necessarily want to take a stand on that. By the first week of July, California was hitting an average of 8,000 new cases a day. Governor Newsom ordered the state shut down once again, basically putting the state back to where the country was in late March. I mentioned the protesters. That is a part of this. Governor Newsom had actively supported the protesters basically a couple of weeks before the second shutdown order came, and continued to support them right up through the beginning of the shutdown order. I don't know what his current position on that is. I don't know if he continues to support the protesters or not. But the point here is that he is not consistent on this order, right? He is not consistent on things like social distancing, and that's pretty common, right? That's not something that's terribly surprising. Both sides, right and left, have their places where they're encouraging people to wear masks and social distance and stay home when you can, and go out and protest whatever it is, or go to church or gather in groups or what have you. Nobody wins consistency awards here. Anything you'd add to any of that, Josh?
Sure. Just the one piece I'd add to that is that there are at least now three churches that have filed formal lawsuits against Governor Newsom, particularly focusing on that inconsistency. These churches are all looking at the fact that the protesters are permitted to assemble, and yet Governor Newsom pronounced a ban on singing and chanting that went into effect on July 13th, and then was quickly followed with including churches in with gyms and nail salons and a couple other kinds of businesses that are just shut down indefinitely. So there seems to be that inconsistency, I think, is really the heart of where I would assume Governor Newsom has opened himself up to some sort of liability in terms of a court's going to look at that and see that inconsistency. So that's also part of the background going on here.
Yeah, and also over the weekend, the Supreme Court refused to consider a case in Nevada, right, where casinos are open but churches are still supposed to be closed. And there were some challenges given on that, and the court refused to speak. So lots of things are still up in the air, and really I don't know that either of us are qualified to comment on the law or on what the courts are going to do. Mm-hmm. But we are hopefully qualified to comment on John MacArthur's letter. Josh, do you want to just walk us through some of the high points of this statement, blog post, whatever?
Sure. So MacArthur opens with a clear articulation that Christ is Lord, and he spends a couple paragraphs on the fact that the church's allegiance is first and foremost to Christ. It is not to the government. There are times where the church must submit to the government, but we can't confuse submission with allegiance, MacArthur wants to explain. He then kind of shifts into a scriptural framework where he addresses the fact that people tend to look at Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 as the two primary passages that govern the way Christians look at the state. And he raises this question of exactly what is the extent of the church's obligation to obey? And that, I think, is the real question that his post here is attempting to answer. And he wants to, from the get-go, kind of lay out the groundwork to say there's a place for obedience and we're past that. And he's trying to kind of build to that. The next move he makes is to spend a little bit of space on, I think the term here is sphere sovereignty. Coyle, do you have a better term?
Yeah, he doesn't use this. That's Kuyper's term, right? Okay. Abraham Kuyper's term. He doesn't use that, but that's I think what he is wanting to allude to.
He refers to three distinct institutions, but he talks about them as spheres with borders, and those are the home, the church, and the state. And he goes through kind of a what at least struck me as a very almost American balance of powers kind of idea of talking about how these three are completely independent. They do not overlap in his understanding, and yet they each function as a check on each other. And so in that sense, the state cannot interfere with the church in its essence. But there's some level where the state could, if the church ever overreached, the state and the home would be the forces to check the church. But then in this case, he's going to use that then to say that the state is overreached, so the church has to sort of push back against the state. He then goes in to focus on California's orders that ban singing and chanting and then mandating indefinite closure. And I think for MacArthur, it seems like the indefiniteness of the closure order is pretty significant. So the way this is currently set up is that the this order is governing any counties that are on the California COVID watch list, which as of July 13th, 80% of Californians were in one of those counties, in which case and Grace Community is in one of those counties. So they're governed by this. And that's where MacArthur goes ahead and says that this church will not comply with this order. He then goes in to discuss the fact that pastors cannot hand authority of governing the church over to the state. He focuses on the doctrine of the local autonomous church, that since each church is self-governing, they can't give away their governing authority to the state. He then made an interesting rhetorical move, at least I think it's interesting rhetorically, where he tells us what he's not doing. He is not making a constitutional argument. He's not reminding us about the First Amendment. And in telling us that he's not doing that, he does go ahead and quote the First Amendment about how the Congress shall not make a law establishing religion and so on, and does actually seem to at least heavily imply that argument by telling us that he is not making that argument. He then went into a section that I did not really understand in terms of its link to the rest of the argument, but he has a couple paragraphs where he talks about Satan is the ruler of this world, and Satan often works through governments, and he seemed to imply that the California government's attempt to close down churches is an act of demonic influence, and that this could then lead to a period of purgation that reveals the true church. We'll come back to that here in a second. He then moves in to talk about a church as an assembly and how the this is where, by definition, he's going to connect the limitation on how many people can be inside or the fact that they cannot assemble inside is an assault on the essential meaning of the church. He then goes through a couple paragraphs of general church history with a couple specific references to show that persecution by governments is the norm. And he closes asking all, let me get the phrasing right, every faithful congregation to stand with us in obedience to our Lord as Christians have done through the centuries, which I think closes this with a call to action in the sense that if you are facing a governmental order for your church to close, you should be a faithful church and stand with MacArthur, which leaves this at an interesting position. Coyle, anything to add to a summary there, or is that did I miss anything?
No, that's I think you hit all the main points. It's a longish post, so that's good. So what do you think? Let's you said you want to come back to that Satan one. I don't have a whole lot to say about that. I guess are you willing to say this isn't a satanic attack on John MacArthur's church?
Well, I think so. I am pretty confident. I'm willing to say that. I'm willing to say at the very least that we don't know that. And I do think so. This was my second read through the article, which is by nowhere near enough to make me any kind of expert on this article. But the second time reading through this, I read it a bit more carefully and analytically. And in reading this as a speech act led me to pay more attention to the rhetoric. I mean, where I think MacArthur is framing Governor Newsom as an object or as a intentional or unintentional force of evil opposing the force of good. And he's summoning all possible allies to stand with him by the end. And I'm just not sure that that's true. I mean, I think it's at least highly plausible that Gavin Newsom is looking at rising numbers in his state, and he has a limited number of governmental tools at his disposal to try to slow those numbers down. And so he's done this. But I don't know that he particularly cares one way or the other about churches, except that that is a place where lots of people are gathering and they are breathing near each other. And MacArthur seems to make this like a special enemy persecution kind of thing. What is there?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I'm unwilling to, you know, put Old Scratch at the head of all of this. I think other than in kind of the existential sense of City of Man versus City of God stuff, as far as that goes, yes, the institutions of this world being marshaled against the church, yeah, in that kind of broad sense. But in this specific sense, no. Now, with that said, I understand not so much why you would want to bring Satan into it, but I do understand wanting or interpreting this as an attack, especially in light of the response to other mass gatherings that involved, you know, people in close proximity and physical activity and so on, as with the protests. So once you've seen the governor's response to that, and then you say, well, gosh, if you can get together and protest, why can't we get together and sing? I then understand saying, well, the governor said no to us, so he must be attacking us. I don't know that that's what's going on in the governor's mind. I know nothing about the governor. I could not have named the governor of California prior to this, just because it hasn't been interesting since Schwarzenegger was governor.
Having the Terminator as governor was a uniquely American phenomenon. I thoroughly enjoyed just that fact.
And he was a good governor. Like, that's part of what blew everyone away, was he you know, this Hollywood celebrity all of a sudden is running an unrunnable state fairly well, especially compared to the people who came before and after him. Anything else you want to highlight out of this list?
Well, probably just that, in closing it this way, I think MacArthur raises he raises more challenges, I suspect, than he intended, because you just mentioned California is a uniquely unrunnable state. It's unique in its size. It's unique in its topography. It's unique in like where people live in the state. I mean, there are large sections of California that are not really habitable. They're the American Southwest desert and so on, or different mountain ranges. So, but in part, I don't know that any other, as far as I know, there are not any other states that have so far successfully said no churches can meet. I mean, what most other states are doing are saying you can meet if you make these arrangements or you meet these criteria.
Which, that was my understanding of California's rule too, right? Was there are criteria, so you can meet outside, right? You can you can meet with physical distancing and social distancing being taking place. And I admit I didn't go back and look up the specific the most recent guidelines. I looked at the general white guidelines on the state, whatever Department of Health or whatever they call it, on their website, but they were from right after the second shutdown order. They hadn't been updated, so yeah. I don't know what the most recent guidelines are.
I did see a Los Angeles Times article that was addressing the specific focus on churches, that as of July 13th. Churches are specifically closed for indoor services. That was an addition to a previous guideline. So I don't know where that falls on the time frame, but I think like, churches were not initially on that list. But as far as I'm aware, they can still meet out in the open. I know I saw one report of I don't know if it was Saddleback or a different church, but there was a California mega church that met on the beach and had something like 1,200 people socially distant worshiping on the beach.
That sounds like Saddleback.
It does, doesn't it?
I'll try not to go down that rabbit trail. Anything else out of MacArthur's letter? Otherwise, we'll get into what we think of it.
The only other thing I thought was just interesting was there was just enough in this document to at least bring to mind Martin Luther King Jr. and the idea of civil disobedience. And right. I know Jonathan Lehman refers to this as a statement about civil disobedience. And which I think will be very interesting to see what comes next in this, in that, and by that, I mean, like, so this statement is now out. I assume if the governor cares, he now has to make some sort of response to this. And part of how Grace Community handles that response will reveal how serious they are about this. I mean, if in a what might be a worst case scenario, if next Sunday Grace Community is open and Governor Newsom sends an order to the local branch of the California National Guard and says, okay, go in and shut that church down. Well, what will happen? I mean, and how they respond to that will maybe show if this really is civil disobedience. I mean, do they accept the consequences? Do they go to prison, pay the fine, and kind of follow the Martin Luther King Jr. route of testifying to the seriousness of their protest with suffering? Or is this some sort of kind of grandstanding and trying to, like, push the state in a looser direction by objecting to classifying churches in this way?
I mean, we should really hope that the next, you know, tomorrow's blog post won't be why we're all open carrying to church next week.
Oh my goodness, that'd be bad.
You forgot to bring up armed insurrection, right? That's the other option.
I didn't go there first.
you gotta be raised in Wyoming to go there first, I think. I think you're right. I suspect MacArthur doesn't intend this to be grandstanding, right? He is bombastic in his speech, but I suspect he means this. And honestly, it'll put the governor in kind of a difficult spot, because having a bunch of people in prison isn't better than having a bunch of people in church, if your goal is to, you know, keep people from clustering together and protect the elderly and so on. Taking a bunch of old people at church, and I'm assuming, like most churches, Grace Community has its share of old folks in it. Putting them in a jail cell doesn't do any good if that's your ultimate goal. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see what's going to happen. Like you said, as much as the governor cares about it, he may also just turn it over to the local authorities and say, hey, you guys figure it out. Or deal with it through fines, or, I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know specifically what the law says. One of the, and again, assuming that this is true in California the same way that it is true in Missouri, I assume that one of the issues with this is we're operating with state of emergency powers rather than laws or regulations passed by bureaucratic agencies or established state constitutional principles. Assuming that California's constitution is like most other state constitutions, emergency powers basically turn the governor into a dictator. And short of the state legislature stepping in and shutting that down, things are much looser. So what that's going to look like in practice, I honestly don't know. Anything else? Otherwise, we'll get into some of the questions we've got.
Yeah, that's all. I think that's everything I've got at the moment. So let's move into a different area then.
Yeah. So I think his theological arguments here are interesting, right? So especially when he brings up Romans 13 and 1 Peter, and he talks about those are binding on our consciences as individuals, but they're not intended for the church as an institution. Right, so we're to individually to respect those authorities, but the civil government, the blog post says, is invested with divine authority to rule the state that doesn't grant civic rulers jurisdiction over the church. So, and then he references the spheres of authority. And I think one of the problems with this is the spheres overlap. Right, there are these spheres of authority. If we're going to use Kuyper's phrase for it, that's certainly true. But they're not spheres that don't touch each other or that don't lay on top of each other. They're Venn diagrams. And of these spheres, the one that is especially important because of its overlap is the state. So the state is a unique sphere that to some extent is responsible for the others. So when Kuyper talks about the role of the state. In his Common Grace and lectures on Calvinism and some of the other places, he basically says it's the state's job to patrol the borders. So it's the state's job to make sure that other spheres aren't getting out of control and consuming each other. I don't know that I completely agree with that, but it's certainly the case that the state alone has the authority to reach into other spheres in a way that involves some kind of physical power. He goes on to talk about the church doesn't have the right to meddle in the affairs of individual families and ignore parental authority. Parents do not have the right to have the authority to manage manage civil matters while circumventing government officials. And again, I'd say actually that's not true. And I would say that the church does have the right to quote unquote meddle in the affairs of individual families. The church ought to be disciplining abusive parents. The church ought to be offering marriage counseling. The church ought to be offering advice in raising children. Parents certainly have the right to manage authority in government affairs, at least until their kids are adults and of age. And the state, again, has the right to intervene even in the internal life of the church when areas under its purview are in question. So if as we've seen in recent years, if the pastor of a church is sexually abusing church members, the state has a responsibility to exercise authority in the structure of that church. Same thing in the life of the family. That doesn't go the other way. Right, the family doesn't have the authority to stop the state when it's overreaching. Right, the church doesn't have the authority to shut the state down when the state does something illegal. It might have the moral responsibility to disobey or to exercise civil disobedience or to resist, but it doesn't have the positive authority to take up arms and shut down the state. Anyway, that's where I would push back on MacArthur.
I agree with all of that. I mean, certainly from a teaching perspective and from as a church member. I mean, I've seen families that and we're not even necessarily like saying worst case scenario, but there are families that are not perfect and they need the outside society to really complete them. I know when I was growing up, my mom and dad made the choice to homeschool both me and my brothers. We were around plenty of people who were all about the sovereignty of the family, and so much so that the state and wider society had nothing to do with the family. But as I've gotten older, I've seen more and more families that really, if you really do just leave that family alone, it's a harm to the children. And you need these, you need teachers, you need police officers, you need all kinds of government officials who are able to step in and say, whoa, for the good of the child, we're going to make some different arrangements. Now, all of those are also subject to abuse as well.
Sure.
Now, on your overall point, I think you're right. And I was looking back at Romans 13, and particularly, like, I don't see the distinction that MacArthur is making here. Because Paul writes Romans 13 with an almost, I mean, it goes against every little libertarian bit left in me. I mean, because he literally says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. In which case, there's not a loophole. That is a universal affirmation statement that has a universal authority behind it. The authorities that exist have been established by God. There's not an exception. I mean, the only exception that I think Scripture clearly gives is when the law directly commands us to disobey the explicit command of God. Which,
right. So if we're believers living in China, right, where the law says you cannot be Christian other than through these couple of maybe kind of permissible ways through state institutions, that's when you say we regretfully must disobey this. And even then, you have options as to how you're going to do it, right? I mean, there are more or less blatant ways to disobey. Now, I suspect what MacArthur would say in response is this is telling us, and well, I suspect he explicitly says this is telling us to disobey. It is telling us not to meet together and not to do so for an indefinite period of time. What do you say to that? How would you respond when someone says, yeah, actually, this is teaching us to disobey. It's telling us that the government is the head of the church and not Christ.
Well, I would say, first and foremost, my gut response is sympathetic to what MacArthur is describing. Like, I do think it is significant for the church that they are being told, until this is over and there's no finish line, until this is over, you can't assemble in the way that is known and familiar and makes good use of your property. But at the same time, I think we have increasing examples of churches and other institutions that are finding creative ways to still assemble. I don't know too much more about this besides the reference, but in Jonathan Lehman's article, he talks about the Summit Church that has sort of decentralized They're already multi-site churches into several hundred home churches for the duration of this.
And this is an article, listener, just we'll put this in the notes also. This went out on the Nine Marks website. Jonathan Lehman has been a guest on the show a few times. He's kind of an expert in church-state relations stuff. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah. That was kind of a – so I think that's already showing that it's not as simple as, well, you're telling us we can't assemble, therefore you are denying what we are as a church. It may mean that you need to be a bit more creative. It may mean that you need to be a bit more flexible about maybe every Sunday school teacher is now a church leader. Maybe we're not going to – maybe we're going to have to rethink some of, like, maybe our super strict definition of an elder – for the duration, maybe that needs to change a little bit. Maybe we need to adapt in the same way that a lot of conservative denominations, they have room for flexibility on like who can lead a church. In normal circumstances, they might say that male headship means that only men can be pastors. But a lot of folks will say, oh, it's fine if you happen to be in China and in a matriarchal group, the only one who is able to read the Bible and talk about it is a woman. In that circumstance, she can preach. Maybe we're looking at some slightly different variations. I don't know that it's quite as extreme as to the point that you've attacked the essence. Now, I do think that pushes back on some of what Jonathan Lehman says about as soon as you have more than one assembly, you have more than one church, which I thought was a whole – that was an inconsistency in his own theology, I thought, that – in that article, but
I
have a trail.
There is an episode of City of Man on that specific topic. I agree with him on that point, but I'm also willing to say, look, there is a plague going around. We can sort of make temporary exceptions and deal with this for temporary circumstances. But yeah, and I think it, what matters here is that Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 set of commands, it may very well be that the government order is wrong, right? It might be bad law. It might be bad medicine, right? The science behind that might be wrong. It might even be right for the church as an institution to do what that Nevada church is doing and work through established processes both before and after the action, right? So churches can speak to the state legislature or in the state of emergency to the executive branch before the decision is announced and petition and say, hey, here's what we think you should do. After the decision, they can appeal to the legislature, right? They can appeal to the executive branch. They can work through the courts. All that's fine. All that's perfectly biblical. What I don't see biblical warrant for is blatantly disobeying a rule like this. It, as far as I can tell, it doesn't specifically target Christians, other than in ways where Christians are likely to make ourselves more vulnerable, right, to the pandemic. So things like singing in a closed building with MacArthur's church is huge, right? It's a mega church of some kind, and I don't even know how many people are in it. 10,000 people singing in a closed room during a plague. Maybe not the best idea, and I think it's reasonable for the government to have thoughts about that. I don't know of any other kind of entity where you'd run into that other than maybe sporting events, but those are shut down, so they're already off. It doesn't specifically target Christians. It's at least somewhat limited in scope, until this pandemic has receded or is over, and it doesn't directly assault the internal integrity of the church. So if the order had said any of the things that kind of historically Christians have cared about, you must teach X doctrine, or you must admit or not admit to membership in your church person Y, or you may or may not hire as your pastor person Z, those are all legitimate reasons to reject a state action. I don't see how this meets any of those criteria. Then again, I'm not John MacArthur.
Well, I think there's probably two other things we should keep in mind. The first is that neither Paul nor Peter wrote their passages in their letters simply or foolishly. They wrote that in an era with immense power held by Rome, and they're writing that to a group that is. Today, if the Christian church was started today as it was in the first century, we would probably compare it to something like a terrorist network if we had no idea what it was. there are a whole bunch of people who are assembling for purposes that we don't understand. They're performing weird rites, and they talk about a dead guy who tells them to do stuff. If we look at it from that point of view, and then Paul and Peter both agree that we must obey the law with this one caveat: if they tell us to disobey divine instruction, then we can disobey. I mean, I think that just that heightens the seriousness of what those passages do.
And now again, so to be fair to MacArthur, they are telling us not to assemble, right? Which is a divine mandate, right? We are told to assemble. Can you do you think that's different than apparently for MacArthur it's not, but do you think that's different from the government coming along and saying, hey, we're not going to do this forever, but just for, you know, this week, all of you are going to, you know, bow down to Baal, or worship the golden statue, or all of you are going to commit adultery, right? Just this one time, it's emergency circumstances, we're commanding this.
I do think that's markedly different. I mean, because what we have is we have a neutral command versus a positive command. I mean, and neutral in the sense that you're not being commanded to worship some other thing. You're not being commanded to do some other thing. The command in this case is to cease an action. And again, if it was being targeted directly at believers, that would be that could be a very different story. The one case I know of where that case was made, I mean, Louisville, Kentucky had a case of that where that happened. Right. The mayor was specifically targeted churches. Well, he quickly rewrote that order, but not before right. the court rejected his law or his city ordinance.
But well, okay, well let's take something like tithing then. Again, clearly a positive command. Could the government come along and say, "Hey, for an indefinite period, no tithing is allowed. You're not allowed to give money to any association, religious or otherwise. No voluntary association. You cannot give money to. All of that has to come to us because we're at war and we need the money, or there's a plague on and we need it to do, you know, research, whatever, right? Reason, super important. We all agree the reason is important, but you must not support your church, your pastor, and so on for this period of time."
Well, I mean, at that point, I would argue we probably need to redesign tithing to be sort of a black market method of supporting church leadership. But it does also raise, I mean, that raises up a whole other question: is tithing? I mean, and again, this is a sidetrack that I think you have an episode on, if I remember correctly. But is tithing a command? Is it a Is the literal one tenth? Divide your mint and your cumin by ten.
Sure,
but
sure.
Is that a command? Is that a best practice? Is that a wise tradition that we've had for millennia now? What is that? But the point there being, but that then raises a whole other question: if that command goes into place, is there then a way? Is there a different way that we could accomplish the same goal? I mean, does that mean that, like, instead of giving to the church, that I just write a check and put it in the pastor's mailbox, or we'd use a direct deposit system? I mean, like,
right.
Are we talking
about... You buy groceries for them or something, yeah.
Are we talking about the mechanism, or are we talking about the action, or, like, what exactly is... Or is this a naming thing? If we just rename tithing to be the weekly gift, like, what... I'm just still not sure if that this doesn't rise to that level.
Well, so I think if this blog post is representative of how MacArthur would respond in that circumstance, his response would be no, you defy that government order. You don't find, I mean, if you want to find some other way to do it, but you shouldn't have to. You just defy the order.
Well,
Grace Community Church could find another way to meet. They could meet outside. They could meet in smaller groups. I mean, they could meet in people's houses. There are all sorts of other things they could do. They've come out and said, we're not doing that.
Which is interesting, and I too hold to the doctrine of local church autonomy, so I'm not going to tell this pastor and these elders that they are necessarily wrong to have said this is what their church is doing. I want to watch that play out and see what happens. I do think we run the risk of being a bit more like Chicken Little. I mean, I think there's you really get one shot to make your play and say this is wrong and we're standing up for it, and if if Grace Community, I mean, Grace Community has kind of laid down there's a line in the sand now that has the pastor and the elder signatures on it. And if they're wrong about this, they don't get to like use that political capital again. They have spent what little political capital their church has in the California community and in the national evangelical community. It's the wager's out. So I'd want to be very careful about kind of seeing persecution where it's not there. I think we're often very prone to think, the evil secular world is out to get us. When I would argue that in a lot of cases, the secular world just doesn't care about the Christian world. We Christians in our evangelical bubbles can sometimes see a boogeyman behind every corner, when in reality, the majority secular culture, they don't care what effect this has on a church on Sunday morning. There's some other motivation that is more that, so they don't care if the harm hurts us, and we might make that much more intentional by painting that in a picture of Satan has won in this moment because this law was passed. When in reality, that's a secular world operating as a secular world and making a secular decision without reference to God, the Trinity, the Church, and so on.
And I mean, I can sympathize with the secular world because I don't really care what the effect is on professional sports. So it's kind of a mutual apathy, I suppose. I think part of what's super frustrating about all of this for me is in April, MacArthur came out with a statement in an interview. Now it was in an interview, so it doesn't have the same sort of imprimatur that this has with MacArthur and all these elders on board. But in an interview, and I'm going to read this quote because it's excellent, even if it's kind of long. So April 19th, MacArthur says, this is after the first shutdown order. Someone asked him, what about this shutdown? Is this okay? Should Christians go along with this? MacArthur's reply, if the government told us not to meet because Christianity was against the law, if the government told us not to meet because we would be punished, fined for our religion and our religious convictions, we would have no option but to meet anyway. That takes you to the fifth chapter of Acts, where the leaders of Israel said to the apostles, stop preaching. Peter's response was very simple. He said, you judge whether we obey God or man, and then he went right out and preached. If the government tells us to stop worshiping, stop preaching, stop communicating the gospel, we don't stop. We obey God rather than man. We don't start a revolution about that. The apostles didn't do that. If they put us in jail, we go to jail and we have a jail ministry. Like the apostle Paul said, my being in jail has fallen to the furtherance of the gospel. So we don't rebel, we don't protest. You don't ever see Christians doing that in the book of Acts. If they were persecuted, they were faithful to proclaim the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, even if it took them to jail. That's been the pattern of true Christianity through the centuries. But this is not that. Might become that in the future, might be overtones of that with some politicians. This is the government saying, please do this for the protection of society. This is for the greater societal good. That's their objective. This is not the persecution of Christianity. This is saying, behave this way so that people don't become ill and die. Now, you may not think that you're going to have that impact on somebody. You're not going to be the one that becomes a carrier and causes something to be passed on to somebody else down the road and somebody dies. You may think that's going to be you, but you cannot defy the government. And I don't think pastors should do this. You cannot defy the government and say, we're going to meet anyway because God has commanded us to meet, no matter what damage we do to people's lives. I mean, what should mark Christians is mercy, compassion, love, kindness, sacrifice. How are you doing that if you flaunt the fact that you're going to meet and essentially you're saying, we disregard the public safety issue. You don't really want to say that. That does not help the gospel cause. What helps the gospel cause is to say, of course we don't want to be the cause of anyone's sadness, anyone's sorrow, anyone's sickness, and certainly anyone's death. So we will gladly comply. This is consistent with what Scripture says, that we are to live quiet and peaceable lives in the society in which we live. We don't rebel. We don't do protests. We don't fight the government. We don't harass and harangue. We don't march. We don't get in parades. We don't stop traffic. We lead quiet and peaceable lives, and we pray for those in authority over us. We submit ourselves to them. And then he goes on to cite Romans chapter 13 and 1 Peter 2. Says, hey, look, this is something that Christians have always thought. Even references Richard Baxter in the 1600s, the great Puritan minister, talking about how if the government says shut down because of a pestilence, you shut down. So that's John MacArthur at the end of April, basically saying exactly the opposite of what he's saying now. I guess at some point MacArthur thinks that tipping point has reached where now this is now a direct attack on the church, forbidding Christians from being Christians. And I think he's just wrong on that. I agree with the MacArthur of April and not the MacArthur of July. Josh, what do you think?
Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, I think it makes sense. I think what you're arguing makes a lot of sense. I think I agree with you. What strikes me as really interesting about this is that I think the MacArthur of July, the current MacArthur statement, is articulating the sense that I suspect is really widespread amongst Christians, that or at least not really widespread, but is within maybe let's say 50 to 60% of Christians. They are skeptical of COVID science. They are tired of going to church in masks. And they don't see an end in sight. And so when the next thing comes out that says, no, your church can't meet, or these things have shifted, so here's the new governmental response, they see it dangerously in some way, or they perceive it this way. And I think the MacArthur statement is going to resonate with a certain segment of current churchgoers. They're going to see that, and I suspect they'll latch onto it, not because it's theologically sound. I think we've established that it's at the very least we're both right, I think, to be skeptical of the theology within this statement, but it's going to resonate with a sense of like, I want to get back to normal, and the life of the church should be a life of easy fellowship within the body. And right now, fellowship within the body is hard. Like, it's hard to go to, I've only seen 1/3 of my church's membership in the last 3 months. Everybody who goes to the 8:30 service, I see them every week. But there's people, I hope they still go to our church. I don't know. It's hard to see a division within the body and see the half that says the mask is so important. If you're not wearing a mask, you're spreading the virus. And the other half of the body that thinks the mask is silly and I'm going to try really hard to love the weaker brother and put this mask on, but I'm going to judge everyone who wears a mask as a weaker brother when I see them on Sunday, and to see this internal division. So I think I think that's who this is going to resonate with.
You're leaving out the group of people who say the mask is dumb and I'm not going to wear it.
Then there are those. Yes, that's
which,
true.
I don't know what it's like where you live, but that's, if it's not a majority where I live, it's a large plurality. And I understand the frustration. You've got a question in the outline about the COVID science. I get the frustration with the government, with the CDC, with the World Health Organization. It's only been just over 4 months since all of this started, as hard as that is to remember. And in that time, we've seen a spectrum of responses from official sources, and I don't mean Donald Trump here, because that's a different question. But even people like Fauci, even institutions like the CDC, and even as much as we can tell, aside from whatever political pressures are going on behind the scenes, right? Even accounting for all of that, we have seen a spectrum of. What's really dangerous is how long it lives on surfaces, right? That was it's hard to remember, but that was way back at the beginning. You know, you sneeze on the surface, and how long is it going to be there? Well, it depends on what kind of surface it is. Is it metal and hard, or is it porous or whatever? Well, now no one cares about that, right? Now we're on to the airborne stuff. So I get that if you've been trying to follow this, it's wearying because the message keeps changing. Right. Stay home, let it pass. Well, staying home didn't let it pass. Right now. Now what we're hearing is wear the masks and that will help restrain it. Well, people are wearing masks and we're still seeing a surge in cases. So again, I can sympathize with that irritation, with that skepticism. Up to a point. My sympathy does kind of stop, and it mostly stops on social media. So I won't dig in too much to that here. If you are friends with me on social media and say something too stupid about masks, you're likely to get blasted. But I can sympathize with that. But it also it doesn't change the fact that numbers are spiking upward, that deaths are spiking upward, although not, and here's where if we were skeptics, we would say, yeah, but not the way they were telling us it would be, right? Again, way back 4 months ago, if we can remember that far, we were being told 5 to 10% death rate for this, and then that started to dip down to 1 to 2%, and now I think we're kind of hovering in that 1% range. I think that's sort of where things are now. I can understand. I can understand hearing all of this competing stuff from the legitimate sources. Again, leaving the cranks out from the legitimate sources, this information keeps changing. So I guess the question, Josh, is if you were a member of Grace Community Church, would you be there on Sunday, this coming Sunday?
Oh, that's a great question. Honestly, I probably would not be. That's probably has more to do with personal reflection on the extent of Romans 13 and about a 2-year stint in college where I was trying to decide, as a purely hypothetical case, if I had been alive during the American Revolution, would I have been a revolutionary or a Tory?
Statistically, you would have been a Tory.
Well, and honestly, I still to this day, even though Hillsdale College is one of the most patriotic places on the planet, I came out of there convinced that the American Revolution happened historically, but it is not justifiable theologically. Like, I can't justify revolting against the king because he raised my taxes. That just doesn't work. So I am very much that traditional conservative guy who's going to say, okay, I am bound by faith and creed to obey the law in almost every circumstance, and I'm going to use every tool at my disposal to shape the law to something that I think is towards the good, but no matter how that process results, I have to comply with it. And if I don't comply with it, I do so knowing that I have to accept the consequences in whatever way those come out. So I would probably this would honestly, knowingly violating the law would probably be a breaking point for my membership at Grace Community. Now, I'm saying that hypothetically, obviously. I don't think it would change, but it could change if I was actually in that circumstance. But a church that was telling me to violate my conscience for the sake of that and for gathering, I think I would, that would be a sign to me that I would say I'm not in alignment with this church, and that means that God is moving me elsewhere for my church membership.
I'm assuming, and I'd have to go back and look at the post again, but I'm assuming they didn't make it a matter of submission to the elders if any individual fails to show up. Like, you could stay home and the elders are going to say, all right, we respect your conscience.
I assume so.
I assume.
I didn't see that or anything like that in the wording.
Yeah, that would be a totally different level of that would change the entire tenor of the letter, I think. For the record, I don't think I would go were I living there and a member and the government told me to stay home. But I think I would. I don't know anything about the geographical setting of Grace Community Church, but I would find like a nearby hill or, you know, be a couple of parking lots away with a video camera just to see what happened and get some kind of record of it. Like, if John MacArthur is going to be let out in shackles or something by the National Guard, I feel like that's one of those moments you want to, like, be there for. But I also don't want to be breaking the law. So there's that. But you've got a good point, and this is going back to, you mentioned King's civil disobedience, right? Accepting the consequences. Can you be more specific about what those consequences look like, and at what point are the consequences no longer worth it? Or is this one of those things where the consequences are always worth it?
Well, I'm drawing that primarily from King's letter from Birmingham jail. And right. In there, he makes a fascinating point about the effectiveness of suffering to prove the legitimacy of a protest against an unlawful act. So I find King really intriguing on how he kind of unpacks the importance of civil disobedience there, particularly because the willingness to go to prison, the willingness to testify, now however many years it is, the willingness to suffer and even die for your cause, that means that you are truly protesting an immoral or an unjust act. If you're not willing to suffer for it, it's not real. So in that sense, yeah, I guess I think it would really depend on, it would really have a, it would really change. I mean, if I really do believe that I am called by God to assemble with the body, and that the church, the state has said I cannot assemble with the body, then whatever those consequences are is what I'm going to have to be willing to accept. At the same time, I still have to recognize that the state has been given the sword by God, and so that the however the state chooses to use that sword, I have to accept as a just penalty, and then rest in the sovereignty and eternity of God for a resolution of this.
Does that include the consequence of spreading COVID-19?
Oh, there's a question, because that's going to now bring in the... I hate the way that this rhetorically shifts the discussion, but...
We hope it's just a rhetorical shift. Right.
But at the point where I have to then weigh this against the love of neighbor, now, I mean, that... And I don't like the rhetoric of framing that, because, like, for a Christian, once it's in the level of this is an issue of how do you love your neighbor, there's really no question left. It's an absolute, because Jesus said this is the second greatest commandment. And really the second greatest commandment is how we accomplish the love of God. So how I love my neighbor is literally the most important thing for a Christian, because it's where a watching world sees our love of God. So if this is a matter of, and this is where the questioning the COVID science becomes really important. I think for if we're thinking about this, it can't be enough for the science to be hypothetical. The science has to be reliable, has to be trustworthy, has to be justified. But if the reliable, trustworthy, justified science tells me that staying home and not assembling will help me love my neighbor by preventing the spread of my asymptomatic COVID-19, and in case my boss is listening, that's a hypothetical asymptomatic COVID-19. I don't want to quarantine myself for the next 2 weeks. I don't have it. So I think it would then, if this is a matter of loving neighbor, then I think staying home is the right answer there. As much as I hate that, I think the logic is inescapable. Like, do you see a way around that?
Yeah, I mean, if and only if you could say, all right, I'm going to get this, but I'm not going to give it to anyone else. So I think in that sense, I could say, yeah, look, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it, and that's fine. I'll go to church and worship, and I'll maybe even my local congregation will have decided, you know what, we're going to do this, and if just everyone in the church gets it, everyone in the church gets it, and that's fine. We'll gather, and then we'll take a couple of weeks off, and then we'll all get back together, or we'll just individually drop out until we're over it, and then keep going, or what have you. The problem is, so if there were some way to say, we will accept the consequences of this individually and as a church body, yeah, I think you could do that, but that's not how disease spreads, right? That's not how plague works. It spreads through communities, not through congregations. We're not only through congregations. So, yeah, if by accept the consequence you mean a consequence that only falls on me and that only falls on my congregation, I think there's plenty of room for believers to do that, and that's where I think King's letter from a Birmingham jail, perfectly good guide to that sort of thing. But we're talking communal consequences involving people who don't have a say in this, involving people outside of your church, involving people outside of yourself, and involving people who, you know, maybe don't have the immune systems to deal with this. So, yeah, I think it sounds like we kind of come down on the same place there. Again, here's where I get kind of cranky on social media, but I find it frustrating when people talk about, you know, I don't care if I get it. If it's my time to go, it's my time to go. And I feel the same way to some extent. Not like I want to be sick, but like if I'm going to get it, I'd rather have it right now before the semester starts. It's much more convenient for me. But at the same time, you don't really have the choice of just getting it yourself, right? The follow-up question is always, how many people do you want to take with you, right? I mean, what's your casualty count going to be, even if it doesn't actually involve people dying? You know, how many people are going to get sick because you decided you didn't care?
I was initially sort of in that, oh, whatever, God is sovereign, who's going to live is going to live, and it'll be fine, kind of extreme.
Well, that's objectively true, but...
And then I talked to some people, and I've learned more about the conditions that my students and my coworkers live with over this than I ever knew before. I've got coworkers with acute asthma. We've got students who have parents who have chronic autoimmune disease issues. All of a sudden, I became much more aware of just how fragile are we people are. I mean, and it's just because my wife and I are young and healthy does not mean that that is kind of the perpetual norm. I mean, we have a lot of people around us who have a surprising number of health issues, and we're in we're just as part of the school. And that's even further true in our church community. I mean, we've got elderly folks who, I mean, so if we do in your imaginary church scenario, you'd have to also kind of weigh in. All right. So if we're going to say this is going to happen and we have a church of, let's say, 500 people. And so we're going to have between 25 and 50 funerals in the next 6 months. And I just, right. At that point, I can't imagine a pastor being like, yeah, that's acceptable. I mean, who's going to do that?
Well, and what really gets frustrating is it's often those older people who are the ones saying we don't care, right? There is a generational aspect here too. We don't care is not a fair way to put it, but it's often the older folks who are more blasé about it, kind of just willing to go to the grocery store without a mask who think it's all overblown there is something deeply admirable about that attitude on one level. I wish we had a more stoic society. I wish we had a society that was more kind of able to power. I think the last 4 months would have been 100 times better if we had a society that was more defined by sort of stoic resolve than by panic online shouting. But that shouldn't be combined with foolish actions. So I guess what it comes down to is we both think MacArthur is wrong. Anything you want to add? Otherwise, we should end it here.
Just that I do think he's wrong. But I still have utmost personal sympathy for that community saying, you know what, by golly, we're gonna do this. And I get the desire and I get the drive. I do think it's a foolish choice. But at the same time, there's still that part in me that just like, I'm like, go for it, guys. Go and make the government back down. But I think you've made a very effective, your questions have kind of drawn out the potential downsides and the problems and the poor rationale that leads to that. But there's still that inner rebel in me that like hates a massive authoritarian ruling that like all churches everywhere will be shut down until we tell you you can reopen. There's just part of me that bristles at that.
I largely agree with you that the problem is this isn't the issue to do that with, right? Communicable disease is not the place to take that stand, particularly when it's communicable to everyone, not just to your church. If it were a wildfire coming towards the church building and you want to all stay there, power to you, I guess. Again, I'm sort of on the that's foolish thing, but don't let the government tell you to get out. You know, I mean, then I would be much more sympathetic, even if I also still thought it was foolish. But when it's something that it's not just your group that's affected, that's when I think it becomes much more of a challenge. So, all right, well, we should leave things there. Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning into the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting christianhumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of high